you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Labor Day is tomorrow. The show is about career. I figured I should open my mouth and say something about labor and Labor Day. So here are some thoughts. We Americans, we lionize athletes and performers, even politicians. And yet we seem to ignore what, at least in my opinion, are more worthy of accolades people. People were more worthy of accolades. In complete anonymity, for far less money, no prestige, millions of people make America run. In fact, I'm looking at one right here who at the end of the show, who works in a fast food restaurant. We're going to talk about it. She's not the manager or the owner or whatever. She welcomes people, cleans up, the usual stuff. I have a lot of respect for her and people like her. America could survive, I believe, without most of its politicians. Some would argue it would be better without them. But it couldn't survive without its regular folks. So, in honor of Labor Day, I thought I'd honor the ordinary workers who make our country run. Let's take, for example, the millions of teachers. They've always been key to our children, our future, but their task has become ever more difficult. They're often required to teach a curriculum. Now it's so ratcheted up with Common Core before it was No Child Left Behind. And I swear, I got a PhD from Berkeley and I taught in its graduate school. I'd have a hell of a time learning the stuff they're requiring fifth graders to know. I swear I'm not cherry picking here. I went through the Common Core standards for the eighth grade and I picked something. I swear this is not an anomaly. This is from the eighth grade math standards of the new, much vaunted Common Core curriculum. Quote, understand that a function from one set called the domain to another set called the range assigns to each element of the domain exactly one element of the range. If f is a function and x is an element of its domain, then f of x denotes the output of f corresponding to the input x. The graph of f is the graph of the equation y equals f of x. That is one of hundreds of eighth grade math standards. I, nor any PhD that I know, doesn't need to know that, and yet is now required, every eighth grade teacher is required to teach it. If we cannot genuflect before teachers who have to deal with all this in a class that are now mandated primarily to be mixed abilities. So you have new English speakers who don't speak any English in the same class as native speakers of English, special ed mainstream kids in the same class as gifted kids because it's seen as elitist to have kept at gifted classes. Should we not honor on this Labor Day teachers more than athletes, politicians, and performers? Or take our plumbers. What do? They contort their bodies day in and day out to reach over that pipe, gain leverage under that pipe. They break their back, sometimes literally, to clean out human waste and mucking around in the mud to replace underground sewers. Shouldn't we pay more homage to them than we do to Alex Rodriguez, Lady Gaga, or I'll be politically neutral, let's say the media's political darling du jour, whatever party they may be in? How about our nurses? Most of them spend a lot of time also like with plumbing, with bodily fluids, but in addition, they're faced with life and death decisions, plus the anguish, I can't imagine how they do it, of seeing patients in pain all the time, dying all the time, and dead. And nurses are critical to all of us, especially as we get older. They, more than doctors, are probably more likely to be critical to our surviving some surgery or whatever than certainly all the politicians put together. And then there are our cops. When you watch the news, especially around Ferguson, they're all portrayed as monsters, holding shields, wielding guns. Excessive force is probably the first word that comes to people's minds when we hear the word police. And yet they do, day in and day out, risk their lives under incredible stress to protect our lives while under that microscopic scrutiny from the community and from the media. I can't imagine that stress of going into a dangerous housing project, even just to try to break up a domestic dispute. They're worried that one of them disputants or whatever, another apartment's resident, is going to burst in and shoot you. And you got to stay super calm even when they're in your face. You got to stay 100% professional. One claim even of excessive force and your career is potentially ruined. Should we not, perhaps in more balance than the media gives us, should we not honor, especially on Labor Day, our police officers? When the perpetrators, the media tends to honor them somehow. They're always nice. They always show photos of these nice young men sitting in their graduation cap and gown, smiling and friendly, but not the reasons that the cops, if they do overreact sometimes, maybe we need to be a little more tolerant and understanding just a bit of the humanity and difficulty of dealing with such perpetrators. So, the next time you find yourself swooning over some weirded-out rock star or some steroided athlete or evasive politician, is there any other kind? I invite you to think about whether other people are more worthy of your ardor. And may we remember that long after Labor Day has passed. And to all of you who do work in quiet anonymity to make this country run, I am grateful. And now to the main topic for today. I have known Connie Brock for decades. Connie Brock is one of the three people who oversees ProMatch, which is and it's funded by EDD and Nova, and it's based in Silicon Valley. And it is, I've heard for decades, one of the most successful job search programs in the nation. It's won awards over the years. This year, an average of 25 of its members, these were unemployed people, find work every month. That's about one a day. With me to tell us how to do it is Connie Brock. Connie, welcome to Work with Marty Nemco.
Thanks, Marty, and it's wonderful to be here.
My pleasure to have you. So you, like most career counselors, advocate that before looking for a job, you know, before usually people tend to go look for a job doing what they're doing, they should self-assess to help identify their skills, their interests, their values, their preferences. Now, beyond broad categories like, you know, I'm a word person or a people person, or I like to work for a company or a nonprofit, or I want to use programming, do you believe it's worth delving deeper into that?
Absolutely. I think the more that you know who you are, the more that you're going to get people to line up with that and be able to help you figure out where it is you want to work. But let me just say something. I don't typically tell people to look for a job. I tell them to look for a boss. I think if you work for somebody who gets who you are, opportunities open up to you. And I think that if you work for somebody who doesn't, doors close for you. And I think that that's part of the reason why you want to know who you are deeply, so that you can really find the people that will tap into that and leverage that.
Connie, over the years, what have you found to be one of the more potent ways to identify who you are more deeply?
Well, you know, I guess I could use myself as an example. I truly, truly decided when I changed careers, I was in the investment industry for years, that I really wanted to figure this out. So I hired a career counselor, and I worked through all of those pieces that you work on. But I also spend a lot of time with non-traditional assessments with people to sort of go deeper for them, because I think for most of us, what it all comes down to is values and what we hold deeply, and trying to find an organization that lines up with that. For example, in my investment career, I changed jobs, and I had two different employers, had the exact same career, the exact same clients, the exact same function, the exact same territory. One company fit me like a glove. The other one couldn't have been more remote from who I am as a person. And I think all of us can relate to that. I work with people every day at ProMatch who come in, and many of them are actually kind of relieved to get a job or to start looking for something else. And I think all of the evidence out there says in a good market, people begin to feel bold enough to start looking elsewhere.
I want to try to understand. I want to go back to the original question about how do you go about self-assessing. I heard now you've said twice that it's important to identify a boss you might want to work for, and you said that learning about yourself can help you do that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say Marty Nemko right now. Let's say I was your client at ProMatch, and I say, okay, I want to learn more about myself. What would you suggest is a not, perhaps, you know, a particularly potent way that Marty Nemko could learn more about himself if I were trying to come up with a new career or job target?
Well, I mean, I think there are some traditional things you could do. I love the autobiography exercise where you go back in time and look at various moments where you were really absorbed in a way that really captured who you were, and we sit down together and look at the themes.
That's normally called the seven stories exercise, where you look at seven stories, you write about a paragraph or more about each, and then you look for common threads.
Yeah. Okay. And I also want to say that for me, the Myers-Briggs was probably the most pivotal tool that I ever took, and I teach an all-day workshop on it at ProMatch, because what it does is it really gets to the core of who you are. So, for example, I am motivated to find possibilities for people or to help open those doors. Other people are motivated to build something, right, create something, or to basically run with something. And the more that... And another piece of the Myers-Briggs, for example, is if you are an introvert and you're working for an extrovert who thinks out loud and processes out loud and wants you to be as quick and as fast in your responses back to him or her because that's how they decipher the world, they're going to be judging you, possibly as slower, not as smart, all of these things. So I really believe that the more that you can find people who really line up with your style, I'm all for diversity to a point, but I think we all speak different languages, and the more that we can speak the language that our boss gets and our colleagues get, the better off it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and yes. And so let's say now you've got some sense of who you are in terms of your skills, your interests, you say your values are particularly important, but you know, everybody's values really are the same. They want to be ethical, they want to be working, you know, they want to work for something that they believe in. You know, are values really that different in, you know, or is it really that different? Are they really that different?
I think it all depends upon who you are and where you are in your life. So, for example, I work in Silicon Valley. I mean, you drive around the parking lots there, and you're going to see a lot of young people there till 7, 8 at night. That's their world. That's what
true.
They want to be,
right?
And then there are other people that have kids and want to be home with their kids. So, you know, I think that alone is one of the differences.
Fair enough. So, okay. So you've done some self-assessment through using the Myers-Briggs, using the seven stories exercise, and, you know, just playing around. There's incredible self-assessment resources on onetonline.org where you can, you know, self-assess yourself to death. It's very fun. It's like a nonstop set of Cosmo quizzes, but a little more validated, hopefully. So now you've got some sense of yourself. You know, career counselors are notorious for constantly pitching, well, now you got a network. Well, some people have the gift of gab. They are physically attractive, so they network more successfully. They, you know, they just do it well. But there are other human beings who are, you know, whose personality is just not that good. What advice do you have for the not-born networker in trying to land a job?
Well, I think you have to get over it to a certain extent. I mean, the whole program that I oversee with my colleagues is all about building your visibility out there. And I'm absolutely convinced that the level of people that I work with, which are mostly individual contributors and senior people, are not going to get jobs. They're not going to get jobs through traditional ways. They have got to find a way to reconnect. And what's a wonderful tool, though, I might add, that people are unaware of is LinkedIn has an advanced search feature where you can put into the advanced search feature who used to work at Seagate, who used to work at LinkedIn, who used to work, and you can find your tribe. You can find people that you worked with that know you, that had a taste of what you bring to the market, and can be a spokesperson or open a door for you, and you can reach out to these people, and I really encourage that. And again, from the standpoint of the same point of positioning yourself well in another company, reaching out to these people for not the do you know of a job question, but can you help me target companies that ought to be on my target list? You sit higher in the trees. You have a better sense of the market than I do, especially if it's a more senior person. And I've had my head down working at my job, and I really need to sit back and kind of look at the lay of the land. And that's a great way for a shy person to network, because he will be connecting with someone he knows and who knows him and who knows his value and can speak to his strengths.
Yep. So you're finding is that LinkedIn is a useful networking tool. What else, you know, given that you only have about 200 members, and mm-hmm. you're saying that about 25 of them are getting a job in any given month. That's mm-hmm. a great percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Other than using LinkedIn to find networking contacts, what else are you finding is particularly potent, either in finding networking contacts, using existing ones, or some other techniques?
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, if you're in a program like mine, we have a group, the networking team, and they do a monthly mixer, and we invite our working alum back to that. We invite anybody that's ever been in ProMatch. And also twice a year, we have our major working alum come back to meet with our members and to inspire them and to
open
doors.
What's major working alum mean?
I mean the people that, you know, have gone back to really good jobs are invited back.
Okay.
To meet with our current members.
Okay.
Okay? So that's a great possibility. But we also teach people how to network. And anyone can do it.
Teach me. Let's say I came to ProMatch and mm-hmm. I want to learn to network. And, you know, because it's radio,
mm-hmm.
let's say you had 1 minute to teach me everything that I really must know, the most important things I need to know about networking. How would you teach? What would you tell me?
Ooh, you're putting me on the spot here.
I
think what I'd probably do is find out a little bit about you and kind of
I'll
what
do
you're.
It. Ask me.
What? Okay, so Marty, tell me a little bit about you and kind of what your passion is.
I'm a writer and a counselor type, and I love having an audience. I'm a show-off.
Okay, tell me, is there a particular company that you'd like to work for?
Sure, I'd love to work for Apple or Google or HP.
And why?
Well, because you get the smartest people working there, and they treat their workers well. They're not going out of business. I don't have to worry about that they're going out of business.
Well, let me introduce you to John, because John's an ex-Apple employee, and he's right here, and he probably didn't know you, and you didn't know him, and I think there's probably a conversation the two of you need to have here that maybe can take you somewhere. How does that sound?
So that speaks to the power of the group. So in terms of teaching me networking skills, mm-hmm. what would you want to teach me?
I'd want to teach you that it's not about you. I'd want to teach you conversations that you can have where you're actually interested in the other person and finding out why the other person showed up at that thing. I have to tell you, though, that I'm a shy person, strangely enough, but I don't typically like to go to job fairs and things like that. I do one-on-one. So I typically will find a person I want to talk to. In fact, there's a guy at Stanford I wanted to talk to, and I didn't know how to get on his radar because he's a pretty famous guy. So I wrote him a little email, and then I said, are you open to bribes? How do you feel about chocolate? And about 2 minutes later, I got an email back. How did you know? When can we meet?
That's a great tip. I love that.
So
great. Now, that's really critical because I know my clients go nuts. They email people ad nauseum and they get no response. They even apply for jobs and they get no response. What if you're saying go ask people for, you know, what company should I put on my radar or whatever? What tricks do you have other than the chocolate trick for getting people to respond to your email and give you that advice about where you should turn to find a job?
Well, again, I said I'm shy. I go through people I know. So I find somebody out there that I've worked for in the past, and I send an email that doesn't say, can you find me a job? It says, could you use your wisdom? John, you immediately came to mind as someone whose wisdom I need. I'm getting ready to position myself back in the market, and I really feel you sit higher in the trees and probably can help me figure out a way to position myself. And oh, by the way, I've got a challenge I'm facing. Can we talk about it?
I have so many clients who say, I have no network, or tapped it out.
Right.
What do you say to somebody who says, I have no network, or I've tapped it out?
Well, again, I think that I could sit down with them and show them this advanced search feature, and they do it all the time in my office.
Apart from LinkedIn.
Okay, apart from LinkedIn, I'd probably get up at a general meeting and brainstorm that person with the entire crowd, and somebody there, more than one, would probably help them.
That's great for ProMatch. I'm thinking about my 7,000 listeners who,
mm-hmm.
and they're welcome to come down to ProMatch, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can Google ProMatch. You'll find out how to go to the meetings. But let's say, apart from ProMatch and apart from LinkedIn, I want to keep going to the well. Mm-hmm. How would you encourage people to build their network?
Well, one thing I really advocate for is a success team, which anyone can create. It's the most powerful tool that I recommend for a job seeker. And a success team is typically, in my view, a small group of people who meet on a weekly basis to help each other with their job search. I think an ideal group is six. I think it's absolutely critical when you sit down as a group that you come to agreement on where you meet and when you meet and what's an excuse not to be there, and that you are not competing with each other for the same job, that each one of you has maybe different perspective, different industry, and then your team becomes your perspective, they become your sounding board, they become your accountability partner, they become the eyes and ears that you need out there, they're the ones that are going to coach you. I'll give you an example. I facilitated one a few years ago, and I had a junior admin assistant, and she held the engineer on the team accountable. She said, "You will be here with your business card next week. I can't believe you don't have one. And by the way, two of us are going to be taking you to a Chinese job fair." This guy was not Chinese, by the way. So again, other people are going to reach out and want to help you.
So that's going to work particularly well with the social. And by the way, you can Google job search support groups, and there's tons of them, mm-hmm. in addition to ProMatch. Also, there's an organization I like called the 5 O'Clock Club, and they have these kind of, they're led by a well-trained career counselor, and there are groups of six that meet by phone regularly, and that's another option that's pretty useful. Let me let our listeners know, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. My guest is Connie Brock. She is one of the overseers of ProMatch, which is Silicon Valley's EDD-sponsored and Nova-sponsored job search support group. Highly successful. They placed an average of one person every day in a job. And I'd like to invite you now to call. If you are having problems landing a job and you'd like Connie's advice and my advice, you've got two career counselor coach type people here. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134.
Can I make a comment here? The market is extremely good now. And that's the reason our people are getting back as quickly as they are. And we are not placing people. That's an important distinction. We are a community of people who provide structure for your job search, workshops to help you practice your job search skills, but ultimately all of these people are getting their jobs through each other and through their contacts.
Okay, fair enough. Let's give out the phone number again. If you or someone you love has got a problem landing a job, we've got somebody here who should be able to help you, and perhaps even with my two cents as well. The phone number, 415-841-4134. What's that? The number for? The number for Work with Marty Nemko and my special guest, Connie Brock, 415-841-4134. And now let us go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. Tell us your situation. Hi.
Hi, Marty. My name is Matt.
Hi, Matt.
And hi. And I wondered if you or Connie can give me some advice here. I'm just tuning in, so if you've already spoken about this, forgive me. I'm a former tech worker. I was a QA engineer. Last October, I...
By the way, people don't know, QA is quality assurance. Go ahead.
Yes, quality assurance. I was laid off as part of a company reorg. Mm-hmm. And I've spent this past almost year basically improving my skills. You know, a lot of at the time I was not too good with test automation, and now I've learned test automation and Java and web driver. So my question is, I'm 60 years old basically, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering, is it pointless for me to sort of like expect to get back into, the technology field?
Connie?
We see a lot of people 60 and over going back to work, and I think what you don't want to do is listen to the press and all the articles out there that convince you that that's not possible. What I do think you want to do is to reach out to former managers if you can. Again, advanced search on LinkedIn is a great way to find them, and sit down with them and say, help me figure out my strategy around the companies that make sense for me now, especially with this new skill set, and maybe a concern that I've been out of the market too long. In other words, get their wisdom. And when you're doing that, you are, number one, back on their radar. You're, number two, getting real advice from somebody who's making hiring decisions, and you're getting in their head in terms of how they ascertain your value, and they're going to be referrals to you. If they've hired people, they've hired people all over the valley. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I really appreciate that. I hadn't really thought about contacting my former managers and, you know, just sitting down with them like that and talking about what do I need to do to make myself, you know, marketable.
Connie, in your opinion, given that he's been out of work a while, is it worth trying to get something on your resume, either as a volunteer or working through a temp agency for a little temporary project to get in, or you think agencies are not worth it?
I think the way all of my folks are going to get back to work, including you, sir, is to reconnect to people that know you and know your value, because they're not going to have any concern about a gap, especially a year gap. That's not a big deal, and they're going to give you perspective, and that's what you need.
Perfect.
I want to thank you very much for the call.
Before
we go back to the phones, Connie, you know there are many people who are out of work for quite a while, a year, which you say if it's your connections, don't care, but employers tend to care. Employers tend to think, well, you know, if this person's been out of work for a year, sure, he or she could be the greatest person in the world, but there is a greater statistical possibility that they've either been picked through by a million employers and nobody wants them because they've been vetted and they were either lousy on the previous job or whatever, or they have a serious illness and they're not really fully coming back, or that they took time off to be a parent and they're really, their allegiance is going to be primarily to their children and not to the job. And so I have many clients who are, I've been out of work for a year, 2 years, who feel that it's hopeless because employers are going to view them as used merchandise, picked through merchandise. What do you say to such people?
Well, again, I would argue that they're not doing things right. The reason why I'm recommending that you reach out to people that know you, that are hiring people, they get what you bring. It's not an issue. If you are trying to market yourself to someone who doesn't know you, you put yourself in a much different category, and then you have to compete with people who are much more current. I don't recommend that strategy, and I see it work every day. I see people going back to work because somebody out there that knew them knows they're going to look good by referring. And I have a statement that I say. I say it's arrogant for you not to let someone look good by referring you.
Right.
So reach out to those people because they will want to help you. And reach out to the people who were your champions, because they know what you do and what you bring.
Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. Connie Brock, what's your question for her?
Oh, great. Thanks. Or for both of you. So I applied for a position about a month ago, and they followed up, expressed interest. I had an initial interview on the phone. Companies on the East Coast, actually. I'd be working out here in a bureau. I followed up a couple of weeks later. He said I was still in contention, but they were finishing up a big project and he'd get back to me. And I'm just wondering about appropriate levels of follow-up or strategy. You know, how do you handle that without being a pest?
Good question, Connie.
Well, thanks, Marty.
I'm here if you need me. Your support.
Thank you.
Do you want me to do it or do you want to do it?
Yeah, how about you?
Sure, absolutely. I normally think that sending a, probably at that point, I'm a fan of the voice rather than the email because it puts a human face on it. I would probably make a call probably in another week and say something like, I'm sure I don't want to be a pest, but I also want to show my continuing enthusiasm for the position. I might point out I've just written another, I'm just saying it's the Wall Street Journal's bureau out here. You know, I've just written an article on a related topic. I thought you might like to take a look at it, so I'm going to forward that to you. But I promise I will not be a pest. If I don't hear from you, I'm assuming you're not interested or things are just going to take a little longer. And notice the humor in my voice, and then I'd leave my phone number twice and then say, thanks, I'm sorry to have bothered you. So that would be the way I would strike the balance. I'd be showing my awareness of that person's needs, that I'm not wanting to be a pest, and yet I also want to show enthusiasm. That's what I would do. Connie, what's your reaction to that?
I completely agree with what you said, and the only other thing I always want to caution all job seekers is build a pipeline of other opportunities. Don't wait for that one. Don't wait for that one.
Cole, you were going to say something.
You're talking about an email followed by you basically call right after you send the email.
Yeah, something like that, or the other way around. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, say you've just written the article, and then you can make it almost seem spontaneous after you say, you know, I'll send you a copy of that article, you know, and then you just send them the email right then, right afterwards, or right before. It doesn't matter.
Great help.
Okay,
great help.
Thanks a lot for calling. Connie, what if, you know, some people are just sick and tired of being in their same industry. They've been, you know, programmers for whatever, and they're just sick and tired of it, and they want to change doing something else, from maybe coding to marketing or coding to supply chain or whatever. What do you tell such people?
Well, I have to tell you that, again, that probably isn't the demographic I work with much. Most of the people that I work with maybe want to take the same skill set and move from aerospace defense into cloud or one of those areas. Having made three career changes myself, they're not easy. I mean, I have the career of my dreams now, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, so it was worth it for me. But I think you have to look at where you are and be realistic about what it's going to take. And, you know, again, where you are in the industry and where the industry is in terms of health before you can do that. It's not easy.
Yeah. What I tell, yes, I agree with you 1,000%. But if somebody, if my client says, I don't care if it's difficult, I am sick and tired of programming, I want to get into marketing, it seems to me that, and usually such people are not 20, they're 30 or 40, and they may have a mortgage and they can't afford to go to school for a million years or anything. So what I tell such people to do is first gain some expertise in a very time-efficient way, whether it be, I believe the article is the most underrated resource in the world. So if I wanted to get into supply chain management, I would Google supply chain management and I would read a half a dozen articles, which are the distilled wisdom of six different experts on the topic. I'd read a book. I'd go to Amazon and I'd read a book on supply chain management or scan. I wouldn't read the whole book. I'd probably just scan the relevant information, writing down questions that I had both from the articles and the book. I would then email people, whether it be on LinkedIn groups or professional industry association groups, forums, and ask them questions that were these thoughtful questions that I got from doing that reading. Now I'm feeling like I've got a little more expertise. Then I would indeed rely on my personal network, and they don't have to be in that field or anything related to supply chain because people know people. I would make 20 my magic number, and I would either phone or email or have coffee with or get drunk with or whatever it would be with all of those 20 people and telling them about, I've gotten really excited about supply chain. I'm sick and tired of sitting staring in front of a computer and looking at and programming. Might you know somebody who I should talk with? And that's what I would do.
That's perfect.
Okay, what about, you say it's easier to stay in your same job but change industries, say going from defense to mobile. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you haven't said so far to help people who want to make that change? They want to stay there still as a programmer or whatever, mm-hmm. or an accountant or an HR manager or whatever, but they don't want to do it in aerospace anymore. They want to do it, like you said, use cloud as the example. Any advice for them that you haven't yet given us?
I don't think so. I mean, again, one of the cool things about a place like ProMatch is you have a million people to talk to help you get a better understanding. But if you're doing it on your own, then I recommend the strategy you just mentioned.
You also, you know, when we talked off, you know, before the show, you correctly say that what often makes a difference between a happy and an unhappy employee is not the job title, but it's, as you say, it's who their boss is, how healthy that business is, what's the corporate culture like? Are people, how do you help clients figure that, or is it, you know, is it the same thing? Go back and then go talk to your network.
No, I mean, I sit down. I love to have those conversations with people, and I love to sort of, you know, question them deeply about what motivates them and what they're looking for and where they're happiest. And are they more of a startup person, or are they more of a, you know, are they more of a traditional?
But how do they find out if a company is, you know, if the boss is a jerk, if the company is unethical, if the workload is 90 hours a week? Do you have any suggestions for how people can vet a company?
Well, again, I think it's one of the reasons that you don't just apply for jobs where you put yourself at the risk of getting a bad one. I think it's where you get out and really talk to people, especially bosses who know their industry and know the companies in their industry. But one of the favorite questions I like to ask in an interview is, what pushes your buttons to my boss? Hmm. That's going to help me determine quickly if he's a micromanager or who he is.
Good. So that's, I agree with that 1,000%, that you really can't in advance really vet a company well. But during the interview process, it really is like dating. You're both checking each other
right out.
So questions like, well, tell me about the corporate culture. What makes it different than, for example, your competitor? Or if I were to be a rock star employee, what would I accomplish in the first 30 days? That would tell you a lot.
Absolutely.
You know, what makes you different as a boss from Joe Blow next door? We're all a little different. So those kind of questions. And then when offered the job, I encourage people to not just negotiate terms or whatever on the phone or email, but to say, hey, I'd like to come in and discuss terms. That only gives you not only a better chance to because you're creating a human connection when you're negotiating in person, but it gives you a chance to check out the workplace. So you can go and see what the vibe is in a room. Do people look happy and contented? Do they look overwhelmed? Do they look stressed out? You hang out in the break room a little bit. You have a cup of coffee. You watch people coming in. You listen to what they talk about. You might even ask something like, you know, I've just been offered a job here. I'm really seriously considering it. Or, what should I know about the corporate culture that might not appear in the official handbook? They may not be completely honest, but some combination of all that should give you a better than average take on what it's really like to work there.
What I love about your talking about too, Marty, that a lot of job seekers don't understand is it is a conversation.
Yep.
It is a conversation, and at the end of the day, they want to hire a human being that's going to fit into their culture, and you want that for yourself, too. So if you don't find that stuff out, it's not worth it.
Let's give you one more call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. Connie Brock, what's your question or comment for Connie?
Hi. I have a specific question, and it relates to my wife. She works in biotech. And she's doing very well, but she's applied for a job with another division in the same corporation. And they asked her current salary, and then they asked, what are your salary needs? And that question is like making her nervous. Like, how do you approach that? You were just talking about negotiating terms after you get the job, but she's wondering what she should do with that question.
Another great question, Connie.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that it's in the same company. Did I get that correctly?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, I think what she needs to do is to ask enough questions to get a real sense of what the job is and how the job is the same or different or whatever. And, you know, she's obviously going to have to share her salary, but I think she can qualify it and say, you know, this is the salary I made for the job that I was doing. I'm really interested in this other role, and I think maybe it leverages this, that, and the other. Does that make sense?
I'd like to add a little something.
Follow up or a clarifying?
Yeah, let me ask a little. Go ahead.
Yes.
I want to add something before you respond. You know, the phrasing I normally like to use is, here is my current salary, but I know that salary is not going to be the problem. The issue that we really need to see is if it really is a good fit for the job. Tell me a little more about the job. And then in the end, I'm sure that's not going to be the issue. That's probably the way I would handle it. Any reactions to both Connie's or my suggestions?
I love that.
Yes, I agree with that, and she's probably there because she really likes the looks of this other position compared to hers. Her only thing is kind of wondering, is this my opportunity? Because the divisions don't necessarily pay equitably for it's a big company,
right?
And is this her chance to say, why not ask for a big raise?
Not at that point. Later. When she's offered the job, then she can mount, you know, when she gets the offer, that's when she can mount her case and say, you know, I'm grateful that I've been successful in my previous job. I'm excited about this. I'm a particularly good fit. I think I could add a lot of value here. Here are some comparable salaries I hear that people are making in this. And so it seems to me that an appropriate salary would be, and you can either throw out the number or simply just make the case that you're worth more. That's the time to do the negotiation.
Okay, perfect. That's what she needed to know. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. So before I let you go, Connie Brock, you want to say something? No? Okay. You had your finger up. Okay.
I was saying I totally agree with you.
Thank you. If there is one more thing you would like to tell our listeners that you haven't yet said so far, what would you like to tell our listeners?
Okay. I am really sick and tired of newspapers coming to me and my colleagues and saying, it's so true. It's so hard for the older worker to get a job. And we totally tell them a different story, but they want to tell the conventional story that the 40-plus worker can't get back to work. It simply isn't true. My clients are brilliant, talented, amazing people. They just need to retool how they do a job search, learn how to do it differently, and understand that so much of it is about building new muscles.
And what if they're not brilliant and dogged and fantastic? What if they're normal, average people?
I haven't met any normal average people in my program, so I can't say.
Well, Connie Brock, it's a pleasure having you here on the show. By the way, if people, whether they're average or amazing, would like to learn more about the services you provide, more than just the job search support groups, NOVA, you provide a lot of... What else do you provide? What else are the services you provide?
The NOVA Job Center is what they call a federally funded one-stop. There are many all around the state. I happen to think ours is amazing.
It is. It's well
For free, the NOVA Job Center provides one-on-one career counseling, an amazing array of workshops. They provide people who've been laid off from the market the opportunity to go back to school
and it's all free.
Skills.
You don't need to pay a career counselor like me. Go to NOVA first.
Well, I think each has its own value. They provide a community. They provide Microsoft Office and all of that good stuff. And then I think my program... I need to say one thing about my program that I haven't said. ProMatch is the only program in the NOVA Job Center that actually requires the members to basically run the program. Mm-hmm. And to me, it is the secret sauce that makes it different mm-hmm. than anything I have ever experienced in my mm-hmm. corporate career, working in two major job centers, because the members build their confidence as they coach each other. It's unlike anything out there. Find a chapter like it somewhere. You won't regret it.
Yeah. ProMatch, by the way, they call them sometimes their different names, Experience Unlimited, or whatever, but there are versions all around. But let's talk about it. So if you're not in the Silicon Valley, they're in Sunnyvale. So if you're not down there, rather than trekking down there, although it might be worth it, start by Googling ProMatch or Experience Unlimited or EDD Job Search Support Group or whatever. But if people are now salivating to come to ProMatch, what should they Google to most easily find you?
Probably ProMatch.org, not com, that's a dating club. ProMatch.org or the NOVA Job Center. We have people commuting from all over, from Tiburon, if you can believe it, from Berkeley. I mean, it's pretty amazing. But then again, we are in the Silicon Valley, and that's why people come there.
Yep. How about, is there a phone number that you want to give, or should they just look this up on the web?
I look it up on the web because I don't want to point you in the wrong direction.
Connie, thank you very much
my
for
pleasure.
Being my guest.
It was
I
great
work with
fun.
Marty
thank
Nuko.
You, Marty.
It was fun. It was a
pleasure. And congratulations on 25 years.
It'll be October 1st, 25 years on the show. You know what I'm even more excited about, I got to tell you. I'm starting next week I'm going to be training doctors on the non-medical aspects of patient care. Rapport building, reading people, all the rest of that stuff. And it's an honor to be joining UCSF.
Oh,
I'm just so excited about that on top of my crazy career counseling life and this radio show and my writing. So that's what I'm really excited about. So,
I love it.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, thanks.
Very cool.
Thanks, Connie.
Thank you.
You know what I want to do now? I 6 days a week, those of you regular listeners to the show know that I walk around the Lafayette Reservoir. I like to think it's hike fast so I can be in great shape with my doggie. And there are regulars, and there was probably about 5 years ago, I'm a counselor type, so I have this rescuer fantasy. There was this woman who was looking very shy. She would never establish eye contact with me. She would always look down. She had a little cute dog named Pippin, I found out. But little by little, she slowly came out of her shell and she started to establish a little eye contact. You know, we were walking the opposite direction. I'd walk counterclockwise, she'd walk clockwise, and she would look down and she wouldn't look at me, but finally she'd occasionally look and maybe even a hint of a smile. And last night, literally last night at 8 p.m., I was doing my usual rigorous walk, and she doesn't walk as fast. But I decide what the hell. She said hi and whatever. So I decided to slow down and the hell with the exercise, and we talked. And of course, I'm obsessed with career stuff, so I asked about what she does. She works at Chick-fil-A, which is one of the fast food kind of places. They got into a lot of trouble because their CEO said that he was in favor of traditional marriage, wasn't supportive of gay marriage, and that's what everybody seems to know about Chick-fil-A, here in the Bay Area. But I looked past that for the moment, although I'm extremely supportive of gay rights. People do have their right to agree or not agree. And I listened. And I have a semi-regular segment on this show called What's It Really Like to Be a Whatever? And I've had everybody from psychologists to prostitutes, but I've never had a fast food worker. And so when she started to talk about it, I said, let me have her on the show to talk about what it's really like to be a fast food worker. So, Gail Ward, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what's it like to work at... Well, let's go back. Let's talk about you personally. You did not... I was surprised that you worked as a fast food worker because you have this typical Lafayette middle class, you know, look about you. You're not 23. You don't give off the vibe of somebody who'd be working at Chick-fil-A. How did you end up at Chick-fil-A? And you have a degree from UCLA.
I ended up at Chick-fil-A because it was at a turning point in my life. I'd gone through great personal struggle and wasn't sure what to do next. It had been a long time since I'd been in the workforce. I had trained up 5 successful children of my own, but it was time for me to see what I could do. And one day, my youngest daughter was looking at her computer and saw that a young lady that we knew who had been adopted out of foster care had been murdered. And it had been a really troubled story. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to sit here and worry about myself anymore. I'm going to do something. And my son said, what could you do? And I said, I could get a job and I could give something toward these kids coming out of foster care into homes. And Chick-fil-A put out their sign, and I had eaten one in Texas, and I had researched the company a little bit, and I knew some of their standards, how they service is the number one thing at Chick-fil-A, whether we're serving the staff or the community. And so I went in, and I interviewed, and I got the job knowing in the back of my mind I was going to give a portion of my earnings to kids in foster care. And lo and behold, they had an initiation dinner, and one of the corporate executives came out and he spoke, and he said, he was talking about their philanthropy, which Chick-fil-A is known for, but he said, do you know that we own and operate 20 of our own foster care homes? And I thought, well, okay, that's where I'll send my contribution. So I knew then it was a good fit for me.
And then it feels, you said it changed your life more than one might think. How so?
It changed my life because I had had a lifelong struggle with shyness, which you saw walking the reservoir.
Right.
And when my boss called me, it was interesting to hear Connie say, we look for the boss, not for the job. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it, but that's what I was doing. And he was obviously looking for the employee. And when he called me and said, would you like to work in my restaurant? I said, yes. And he said, I think I'll put you in the dining room. You will be my dining room hostess. And I didn't know whether to tell him then about the battle with shyness or... Of course, he had picked it up during the interview. But he saw something else, and thank God that he did. It was a blessing for both of us.
And have you become less shy as a result of working? I mean, you spent a lot of time mopping up, cleaning bathrooms, greeting people, doing that stuff. Has it had an impact on your shyness? And, yeah, has it?
It's had a tremendous impact on my shyness. I've been there since opening day, and opening day, we had thousands of people come through our restaurant. And it was my job to try to meet them all. Couldn't do it on opening day, but I tell you, you come on a regular old Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, and I am bound to meet you. And it is a different experience at Chick-fil-A. As I said, service is our number one priority. We serve through good food. We serve through knowing that every person who walks into the restaurant deserves great, great service, great care. You get more than food at Chick-fil-A. In our restaurant, you with me in the dining room, you get someone who acknowledges you, who learns your name, who knows you the next time you come in by name, and takes pleasure in bringing you the best food around, and says, goodbye, it was nice to see you. And we always answer with, it's my pleasure. And sometimes people say, don't you get tired of saying that? And I say, I don't say it if I can't mean it. So if you happen to be there and you don't hear it, you caught me at a bad moment, because I say it all the time, and it is my pleasure to serve.
There are many people who, especially in the Bay Area, who are very cynical about corporate niceness, corporate policies, corporate abuse of workers, corporate abuses of, everything, raping the environment, whatever. You sound like you believe in the company. You're not an idiot. You have a degree from UCLA. What has enabled you to feel belief in this fast food restaurant chain, corporate chain?
Okay. I learned about it from my kids who had researched. They even thought about looking into being owner-operators, and they told me about the amazing family that began Chick-fil-A. They began it in the 40s with their own restaurant called the Dwarf Grill in Atlanta. And in the 60s, then they morphed into small, the Chick-fil-A. They were the first ones to put food courts in malls, and that's where we get the food courts in airports and so forth. It was their idea. It was a better way to serve. And I found that Truett Cathy, the owner and the CEO, to this day, he is in his mid-90s, and he still shows up for work, as far as I know, at the Dwarf Grill, that he treats everyone with respect, with care. We have second-mile service, which means we will go the extra mile. I do it every day. If you need something extra, we aren't the ordinary fast food where you have to come up to our counter and order. When we see you walk in and we might sense you need a little something extra, we bring the menu to your table and I'll sit down with you and I'll tell you about what's on that menu. And we'll pick out something just for you and I'll take your order and I will bring it to you. That's what Truett Cathy does at his restaurant. That's what he's trained everyone to do who works for him. And my employers treat me exactly the way I treat all the guests that come in. And that makes a difference. That makes me want to go back tomorrow and the next day and again.
Yeah, you keep talking about treating everybody equally. And again, I know many listeners to a station like KLW, you know, they hear the word Chick-fil-A and all they hear is gay bashing. Is there any... We know that the CEO or his son said that he believes in traditional marriage, not gay marriage. But is there? Do you sense that really that everybody is treated fairly? Are there gays who come into the restaurants? Are they treated well? Are there gay owner? Use the term owner operators. Are there gay owner operators of franchises? Do you know?
I have been told that there are gay owner operators of the franchises. I personally know only two or three, the ones who trained in our restaurant and my beloved owner. As far as the guests. When we opened, we had people on both corners outside. Some were shouting this, and some were shouting that. And my owner-operator said, at the end of the day, invite them all in for a chicken sandwich. And that took away everything else, because our food is good. And there was a smile, and there was me standing there to greet them and say goodbye and care in the meantime. And over the course of the last 2 years, we have had the most special people, an incredibly diverse group from the Walnut Creek area, come into our restaurant. Yes, we have gay couples, we have families, we have people from all different countries. I have learned how to say so many different names from different languages. We have men and women and. Friendships have been formed. People have learned that somebody loves them for who they are beyond what the world might see, wants to get to know them. And when they move away, there are hugs and there are tears. And we are friends beyond the fantastic milkshake, beyond the mopping up the bathroom, beyond taking out the trash.
I've been in restaurants, chains, and I'm not unhappy with chains. When I go into, Red Lobster, I'm not unhappy there at all. But this sounds almost like a family. Can you put into words what is really at the core? Is it the training? Is it the people? Is it the fact that it had a Christian foundation and that has kind of suffused through? What's that about?
Well, I believe the Christian foundation does come true, come through. I believe that when Jesus told us to treat others the way he treats us, that is the way we treat each other at Chick-fil-A. I believe the difference in Chick-fil-A is that we carry on something like an old-fashioned diner. If you remember the Mayberry RFD show and you think of Aunt B, you might think of me. It's that kind of a thing, a sense of community. I like to think that when there's a disaster, Chick-fil-A will be the place people will congregate. We'll be there to celebrate on the good days. We'll be there to celebrate when things go wrong. And as Marty said at the beginning, there are other places where you could go, maybe a sports bar where we'll celebrate the heroes in our country. But in Chick-fil-A, you're going to celebrate the little accomplishments. You're going to celebrate the 3-year-old who's been coming in since he was a baby and loves our play area, and And I tell you, he had his first battle in the play area. He bit somebody, but they brought him in again. He had an accident in the play area when he was potty training. But last week, he learned to sing all the way through his fast song, and that's what he came in and did. He sang through his first song with me and for me. And it's growth. It's personal growth. It's growth together.
No, lest this be seen as just a peon to the joys of working, mopping up and greeting people in a fast food place. You told me about a very difficult situation in the bathroom with about a woman. Tell us that story.
Well, we did have a guest who loved Chick-fil-A dearly and loved our restaurant and loved our people, and over time realized that she must have felt uncomfortable there, and we began to see that, and she did cause some uncomfortableness for us. And, you know, Marty, this just isn't something that would be positive for me to
okay,
go into.
Fair enough. Let's just simply say that Gail had to do a lot of work that was very unpleasant to deal with this, and yet they tried for months and months. It's almost like she was a family member to try to make it work, and Gail ended up having to do a ton of unpleasant work to deal with it, and finally it was not successfully resolved. But is that fair enough?
Yes, that's exactly right. Good ending, Marty.
Okay. So I want to give you the real ending. So if there is something we haven't talked about yet so far that you would like to let our listeners know about what it's like to work in fast food, not about Chick-fil-A specifically, but just as a fast food worker, front line, what do you want to tell us that we haven't yet heard that might surprise perhaps even our listeners?
Well, I would tell you that it's not about the money. I've said from the first day I'm not mm-hmm. there. For the money, it's about service. It's about smiles. It's about being there next time. It's about a thread of being somebody that you can count on and be counted on.
I do have another question. It's very, very brief. You're a person of very middle-class background. Lafayette is about as middle-class and perhaps maybe a little stuffy as exists. How do you feel when you get together with your friends who are professionals and doctors and lawyers and whatever, and they ask you what you do, and you say, well, I work at a fast food restaurant? What do you say, and how do you really feel?
I say I'm the dining room hostess / janitor at Chick-fil-A, and I couldn't be more proud. Sometimes it could be humbling, and I could be humiliated, and I don't earn what the other wives earn. But I have learned over the last 4 years, the last 2 years of being at Chick-fil-A, that it goes way beyond that. And I am happy, I'm proud to be one of the laborers on Labor Day.
I cannot think of a better way to have ended the show. It was almost magically perfect that we had this conversation yesterday. Gail Ward, thank you very much for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty. I'll see you at the reservoir.
You sure will. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers, and Amazon has lots of fans and some enemies, but no one could argue it isn't successful. What career lessons can we learn from Amazon? I'll talk with John Rossman. He is the author of The Amazon Way. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
For the archive of Dr. Marty Nemko's articles, information on his 7 books, including How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, you can go to martynemko.com. That's MartyNemko.com. Join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemko here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.